I'm delighted to have another opportunity to deliver a budget speech, my first in an election year. Mr. Speaker, I would like to begin with the environment. This year saw this House pass unanimously a motion recognizing that our planet faces a climate emergency. While there are still many people who will deny this fact, it is true to say that none sit in this House. I congratulate the Minister on the firm belief in bringing the motion, and government as a whole for seeing the wisdom of accepting a minor amendment which would allow its unanimous passage. There is no doubt that all of the speakers here understand the urgency of the global crisis being faced and appreciate the need for urgency and continued unanimity in mapping out our community in the future. I have agreed to discuss the proposed legislation with Minister Gosset. I believe that we are very much in agreement that it needs to be as challenging as possible in its hardest hit step. Whether the legislation is at present too compromising is a valid challenge, I believe, but I know that Dr. Gosset will be pressing as hard as possible for the least compromise, and in that he has my full support. We are genuine in our declaration of a climate emergency. We must set aside our day-to-day differences, recognizing that they will continue to exist. Relatively trivial political differences have become to many ironclad oppositions. Fundamental agreements remain unacknowledged or unappreciated. We must explore these agreements and set forth on that pathway to deliver the results that need to be delivered for citizens and emergency. I would further ask that aside from the primary legislation, that we convene a committee, not necessarily a select committee, and not necessarily the committee described in that legislation, and attempt to map out the future for the next 10, 20, or 30 years. I believe this is something we do need to do together to ensure the security of our future. In this way, we can see clearly what needs to be achieved and how it can be achieved, and so that we can get cross-party agreement on measures which may not in every case be popular, but which will be necessary in meeting the challenges ahead. I believe that only by showing the political leadership and strength necessary, and by sharing the responsibilities, will we be able to restore ourselves in attaining our goals. And of course, there has already been some progress locally with respect to improving our environmental credentials. So now I must submit to the more adversarial part of my speech business position. We recently have seen replacement and tower deliveries and solar panels at New Harbour. I know that the Minister gets piqued whenever I level criticism at him. It's natural, but I'm afraid I'm not simply going to pat him on the back on every occasion whenever he makes a statement. It's not my job to do that. It's my job to probe the Minister's statements on behalf of our community so that they can be properly understood. If this means that the Minister has to level himself back at me, well, that's fine. That's it. My skin is thick. But I know I'm on the right track if the Honourable Gentleman chooses to adopt that strategy. Mr. Speaker, I do applaud the solar panel initiative and look forward to seeing more of the same being delivered after the recent government announcement. The more energy we produce in the sun, the less fossil fuel we have to burn, and the less fossil fuel we burn, the less impact we will have on the global climate and indeed on our immediate environment. There is, of course, a commercial aspect to such projects, and it's essential that they are delivered with complete transparency in the tender process. Whether the Minister likes it or not, there are big question marks over the way that the New Harbour installation will shift out to replace the port of the GSLP. When such happens without the transparent tender process, there can only be suspicion. This suspicion is supported by other concerns I have received from another agency when they thought they wanted to send the panel. They were told that their project would only be approved if they went to the same suppliers as the New Harbour. That is a scandalous attempt to monopolize this market in favor of an individual and in no way encourages a free market or indeed rapid progress in the installation of such facilities. Mr. Speaker, I hope all future projects and similar requests will be managed transparently as they would be under a GSD government. Very recently, we saw the destruction of a short tree on Devon Tower Road, followed by news that people in the tree were deceived and that they would be replaced. Not the first time this excuse has been used, as the same happened with the removal of pepper trees in another car park. Some will say that it has planted X number of trees, it created a park, and will create another in its own. is laudable, but it does not excuse the destruction of the few mature trees that we have in our urban environment. Every one of them contributes to the removal of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, destroying them to put up yet another tower block in this ever-growing concrete jungle created by the geothermal trees. Inexcusable. Trees contribute towards improving our air quality, and one would think that this would be a high priority for government, considering that all too often the air quality is so poor. Traditionally, I say that many trees have been planted, but the truth is that not so many have been planted in urban areas, and that does not excuse the destruction of mature trees. And this seems like a good opportunity to move on to air quality, which remains a serious problem in our community. The Minister spoke of how we have reached new targets for air quality for the first time. Many will question this. But let's give the Minister the benefit of the doubt. Let's hear the next one. The change of statistics from nitrogen dioxide to nitrogen dioxide from the three monitoring stations all in the South District. He neglects to mention the information from diffusion stream monitoring, of which there are 27 distributed more evenly around Gibraltar. 26 of these 27 don't increase for 2018 over 2017, and 21 of the 27 show nitrogen dioxide levels greater than 40 micrograms per cubic meter, an even acceptable mean level, and very different picture than that presented by the Minister. And because of the tardiness of moving a monitoring station to the North District, it is much harder to determine what benefits are derived from the dual fuel power system, as we have nothing to compare it to. We have no idea what air quality is like in the vicinity of the new comprehensive school, where nearly all children aged 11 and over will spend the majority of their day. Indeed, the school itself is working towards greater congestion and therefore pollution than already exists in the Waterport area. It's really difficult to see what strides have been made to seriously improve air quality. Yes, we are away to a dual fuel power station could make a difference to the system, but in the meantime, nothing has happened to significantly improve air quality. Nothing has happened to change practices in the dockyard. No serious changes have occurred to change practices in the bunkering industry, and building development has taken a rampant turn with no end in sight. All of these major contributors to poor air quality. All of these are major contributors to poor air quality, and it is hard to see a single step the government has taken to significantly improve the amount of air pollution derived from these sources. And let's remember, air energy is easily fossil fuel, and methane is a significant contributor to global warming. The Chief Minister compared their dual fuel power station project with the GSC's project for last year, the entrance to the Lake Region. The very area that his government has torn up and destroyed. Gone is the habitat of the barbary partridge that we know. Gone is the habitat that saw migrating birds stop to feed before making the kite crossing. Gone is the habitat of innumerable species, including Iberian warblers, which I know are very precious to the use of the air. No place for them to fall. The species diesel spewing from chimneys. For utter nonsense, the average gentleman have either no idea about how these things work, or more likely, they find it paying attention to changing the image, entirely out of touch with reality for the political purposes. Emissions from a diesel power station can be very effective in fuel, and nature survives very well alongside such facilities because they are secure and have limited footfall. Nature can thrive in the environment with such facilities. Not so around a public facility, such as a sports stadium, with heavy footfall of people and vehicles arriving and departing, causing huge disruption. As for the dual fuel power station, built so close to so many London schools, it has not been equipped with the best possible technology that has been promised by the Ministry. There are no electrostatic facilitators to do, so the facility has to run on diesel, and this must be considered a possibility, although not to build a dual fuel plant. In particular, some of the most harmful emissions will not be removed. Combine this with the limited budget tax imposed by the proximity of the airfield, and you wind up with those particulates and any other emissions being blown straight towards some of our most densely populated areas, not to mention the new comprehensive schools, which have been inconveniently located nearby. And governments collectively cut themselves on the back of this.
that they made for all Christians of the Wyzenetta Christian Party, these claims would have been the result of the GC project. So I remind the people that we pay £21.6 million in subsidies each year to keep prices down for the consumer. £21.6 million, almost half the education budget, to subsidize electricity prices. Of course, this artificially low price is nothing to discourage wasting and unnecessary consumption. How does that help the environment? And finally, let's briefly analyze the environmental credentials of LNG. Methane, in the context of the global environment, since we've accepted that there is a global environmental emergency, methane is a major contributor to the greenhouse atmospheric effect, second only to CO2 and about 21 times more powerful in its warming effect than CO2. LNG, methane, has to be imported by tanker from Holland, by the way, Rotterdam, I think. As that was factored, this frequent need for transportation over long distances, all the while burning marine diesel, and has been factored into the calculations for environmental benefits. The liquefaction and gasification processes produce CO2, and this has been factored into the calculations for environmental benefits. Between 1.5 and 3% of all gas extracted leaks into the atmosphere during the extraction, transportation, and gasification process, and this being factored into calculations for environmental benefits. LNG is not the solution. Globally, it is just another fossil fuel, contributing powerfully to global warming locally. Locally, thanks to the poor choice of location, it is certainly no better than the last three proposals. Probably worse. Government has created a myth about LNG. The new renewable energy efficiency, which is now dependent on fossil fuels, that is the future I support. Has government made any serious attempt to reduce emissions from vehicle traffic? Particularly when they are encouraging so much construction, which brings so many pollutant worries onto our streets. Obviously, the internal combustion engine being replaced by clean electric vehicles, or at least smaller, more modern vehicles, as some have said. The other three are why is this? Government's incentives for people to make batteries are simply inadequate. While very few people might take this step for altruistic environmental reasons, the majority will not and need to be incentivized to do so. And the reality is that those incentives need to be financed. Make less polluting vehicles cheaper and more polluting vehicles more expensive. The formula is straightforward. You have to commit to a better environment. Obviously, to some extent, I can speak from personal experience here, as I bought an electric moped earlier this year. The beauty of an electric moped is that you can recharge the battery at home. So not having a garage is not a problem, and most importantly, as with all electric vehicles, there are no exhaust fumes. However, it's not particularly pretty, it's not particularly fast, it's 5 to 6 inches of water, but neither was it particularly cheap. Even with the £150 cash back on offer, it was only a little cheaper than the 125 equivalent, so popular in Gibraltar. Oddly, I would have had a greater cash back if I bought a cheaper electric bicycle. Some would not understand that moped is probably the most popular form of transport in Gibraltar. You may not understand that if really significant incentives are provided to encourage the purchase of electric equipment, we might be able to take large numbers of polluting vehicles off our streets, not to mention, of course, the additional benefit of reducing the ambient noise emanating from our roads. We have to commit to a better environment. And the thing is, super low emission cars. The fact that they remain so few on our streets is a clear indication that the incentives on offer to switch to lower polluting vehicles are inadequate, and there are no measures in this project to change that. The message is simply not getting through. And then there are the commercial vehicles which deliver to management of the issue. Isn't it time that businesses were encouraged to switch at least the majority of their delivery fleets to electric? There really is no excuse for all the emissions produced in town by these vehicles, and it could so easily be prevented. What incentive does government offer business to make this important change? We have to commit to a better environment. And then, of course, Mr. Speaker, there is the price of diesel, which remains cheaper at the pump from petrol. That's something the government can change tomorrow, wouldn't it? what is that for the most polluting vehicle and the least for their fuel? It's critical, and yet it is the same truth. We have to commit to a better environment. Conquering, let us see, that space is another source of significant global pollution. When I suggested earlier this year that perhaps an informal review of the industry should take place to provide advice on whether and where improvements could be made, government reacted as if I somehow insulted a member of their family. Mr. Speaker, there is nothing wrong with seeking an opinion from a third party. And the government did exactly this when they spent hundreds of thousands of pounds on their strategic transport system. Obviously, most of that budget has been somewhat disappointed. Conquering is a major pollutant. Carbon dioxide, nitrogen oxide, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, particulate matter, and hydrocarbons such as benzene are all produced by bunkers. All are harmful to the environment and to human health. And yet this government would immediately dismiss this suggestion that we might get a third party to look at where industry practices to determine if there are any areas where improvements can be made. Any improvement is important because at present and all too often, we are poisoning our own people. I'm sorry this sounds harsh, but it is the reality. We have to commit to a better environment. And then we have the doctor. The government refuses to report change, or an industry that refuses to voluntarily make that change. TikTok makes a lot of money off of the data. That's for its directors. As a company, they pay very little profit. All in all, the company does very well out of Gibraltar, and yet they continue to be a significant polluter. They refuse to make the necessary changes to their business, such as providing short supply power to vessels in dock and in town. And government, year after year, allows them to get away with it. The government is guilty by association. They have, for the last 5 years, spoken of negotiations that are underway with the company, negotiations to allegedly change these practices. 3 years of policing and no action. It's not good enough. We have to commit to a better environment. Construction and creating a concrete garden seem to be this government's major effort. One must presume this is necessary to fund the continuous overexpenditure of so many of the projects. What is undeniable is that despite the criticisms they used to level at the two state administrations about the amount of building going on, they've accelerated development to new heights, literally in the case of some of the businesses have been ruined. It used to be a cause for concern that our CGs were disappearing. No one would then have imagined that the same would happen with our rock CGs. Yet this will be the remarkable legacy of this government. The latest addition to that legacy is a huge reclamation and development of Colony Island that has been dubbed Victoria King in the cave of the people. Much has been said of this in the past few weeks. I think that would be the part that irritated you. Much has been said of this in the past few weeks, but it's necessary to review some of it. The government marketing machine has gone into overdrive, given the hard spell to what is ultimately supposed to be a private project, albeit funded by public money. They decided to guard and listen to allay environmental concerns, and there are many, but this moronic project already. The project raises so many questions of accountability, use of taxpayers' money, and conflicts of interest, so the people have a right to full transparency by publication of all documentation associated with the project, and not just the government's opinion. The first question has to be, why are we using taxpayers' money? Ironically, the $300 million raised by more than government and housing estates to fund a project from which the private developer is seeking to profit hugely. Why doesn't the developer risk or raise its own capital for this project? No, the government has decided that the taxpayer will bear the risk, so that the rich developer, with names to many things, can make any profit. The deal is entirely okay. The point is that we've been very careful in the course of the debate for the past 48 hours on this. Apart from a point of order made unnecessarily at the beginning of my intervention, to avoid personalizing this debate in any way. So the honourable gentleman, Mr. Speaker, has said that the developer agreement meant a lot of money are unique to me. And if you can pick up the Archetypal with a person, and that they're linked to ministry, the Archetypal just confirmed to the house in order to persuade me that he's not trying to deal with something that is the conscious of all, which he heard to give me full disclosure of who the developers are and what they need to make for them. It didn't speak at Father the Chief Minister did give full disclosure. As far as I'm aware, the Chief Minister did give full disclosure, and the developers themselves, who clearly have links, because they are part of the or members of part of the Center for the Constitution, or was a partner of, or a member partner of. I would also say that I'm not specifically certain of, because until the Chief Minister stood up, I did not actually mention any particular minister. I said that many times. I said many times. So not to be specifically cited. So I'll just give one for a moment. Thank you very much. The argument I speak in that list of comments is the first to the link between some of the developers and the law firm of which I am a partner on tobacco, which is declared in the register of interest, and of which the former leader of the commission, sitting three along from him, is also a partner. Is that what he's referring to? I don't know what the student is asking, what are the limits that you are referring to? What is the nature of the limits? He has decided that the developers are part of the same law firm which is a part of which is the partner of the bank. So the next question, so I think there is no point of order. The Chief Minister has tried to make sure I've made clear that it is not before you spend all the time that he is not an active partner at the moment of a firm of the legal firm. Okay? And I'm not a minister for you. Is that true? I said this. You need to be careful because if there is not one minister and that is the Chief Minister only, you are comparing it to the others, and that is unfortunate. I believe other ministers have it. I must be named by my honourable friend Mr. Hammond in his book, the Chief Minister himself. The interest of other members in this house in doing developers. That's the point that's been made by me. Marvelously well, so I'm a very high standard of the event without attended first of all, I wish they were able to the whole family family and two made them to the end of the year. But it did continue. The government has decided that the taxpayer will bear the risk so that a rich developer who is linked to the ministry can make a profit. I can move on. Does not have an interest in the community. That is correct. What we are saying is not identifying the debt. It's very correct, Mr. Speaker. But it's very correct that it's not our own concern, Mr. Speaker. And government's response to public inquiry isn't a public or associated document, but a break in the GST. Is it any wonder that people are suspicious? Moving on, Mr. Speaker, because we come at this question, we have a great deal of pollution. When government speaks of a climate change emergency, it isn't aware of how much CO2 is created by the construction industry. Used to determine our overall contribution. Globally, cement production alone puts 2.2 billion tonnes of CO2 into the atmosphere, about 80% of all CO2 production. How much are we contributing per capita? I fear it is significant when I think about the construction, and yet we have unanimously acknowledged the global environmental emergency. How can government reconcile these two opposites? Is not just about CO2. We have all had to live in a building site for what seems like forever. The pace of development increases, not slowing down. The dust, the noise, the pollution from lorries, the traffic disruption leading to more pollution. It never ends. It is a mark of success for this government. Well, success can be measured in other ways, I assure you. We have to commit to a better environment. Let's talk about sewage treatment. Again, government promises and commitments fall far short of the reality. While government projects proceed at sometimes alarming rate, when money is no object, the sewage treatment plant project has been virtually stalled for the last 7 years. We're giving a technical announcement and it just shows that something is happening, but then months go by before we hear of it again. I'm not really sure how many times the government has announced it has awarded the contract. We just got an article from the press last time. But that was several months ago. At the time when the Europa stable was subject to drinks in the main design, the Swedish Freedom Front was a sound manifesto commitment. Yet the former project will essentially be finished a month from now, the latter not even started. Years of simple pollution of the sea, something that is in this day and age utterly unacceptable. Is this our commitment to the environment? Is that sea and the illegal activities of some commercial fishermen remain unresolved. That all I see are essential images of this activity. The authorities are well aware of it, but do not act in any meaningful way. The main thrust of the objections I receive are not so much about the illegal fishing itself, but an inequity in the application of the law. Where local fishermen adhere to the rules and comply with any seasonal bans which may apply, while all sea licenses and accept that the risk finds that they fail in any of these measures, they see every day illegal activity in those waters for which they are so careful to comply with the law. Is it any surprise that they feel hard done by? Particularly when this government, prior to being elected, was so forthright in its commitment to stop illegal fishing. That policy has failed. It was never delivered. And I suggest that unless government is intending to change tack with respect to the line taken towards enforcement of the law in this area and actually begin to apply the law equitably, it needs to admit its failure and come up with a different plan that is fair to locals as well as non-locals. I spent a lot of transport and budget. Early in this parliament, there was a discussion verging on debates, as we pointed out in the questions, over the bus fleet replacement and the buyback clause. The ambiguity centered around the government's manifesto commitment, which read, we will exercise that guaranteed buyback so that we will once again acquire new buses that will be more accessible and usable by the elderly and disabled. Now, while there was discussion there as to the interpretation of this commitment, it was accepted that the buyback would not happen immediately, as we can see. However, we are 4 years down the line with an election looming. It would be highly disingenuous of government to suggest that a commitment made in their manifesto was not applicable within the term of the administration immediately following the election. So I would ask now whether the government is actively engaged in acquiring new buses, and if so, is it looking at alternative types of fuel in line with environmental objectives? And will an announcement be made before the election in line with the manifesto commitment? I need to say that the old bus fleet, teaching to a local service provider, has meant those buses remaining on our street. That arrangement can only be seen as a poor decision from an environmental perspective. Should we talk about parking? I'm not sure. Our problem for so many, but not all of us. Of course, we can't all afford the asking rates for taking the Midtown car park, no matter how much we'd like to spend to them. Some fortunate stores were able to get 2 spaces for the price of one. And if they can't ask in prices, they are 2 spaces for the price of a good one. And I'm going to deal with that. Some, which I understand from my reading of media, are amounting to 40. Is that correct? Some 40 fortunate stores? Is that what you're referring to? Some 40 fortunate stores? Are you referring to that? It's just being reported in the media, and I have been following that you have, I don't have television. Is it 40? Is the number you're referring to 40, or is it just 2? Is it 40 or 2? I don't know if this is the number. And that sounds not 40. That sounds like a student of 40.
Well, in a motion, you should keep that comment already.
changes are then more anti regulated in the face of the institution. If that's what we want to do in the institution, yes, let's go ahead. We want to.
I have mentioned no individual, and my goodness, there must be some deep consciousness about it, if that my name is taken with my word. Some fortunate souls were able to get two places in Christ as one. That is a fact. Indeed, the current asking price is two places for the price of half of one. We are not all so fortunate. The government even has to come from here. Some government already had it, but I speak now of the government they collected them. Where in the public clamour for parking and well aware of the rules of supply and demand, we create new spaces, and then, rather than raising about reasonable rates that people with a normal income can afford, as I must have been have done previously in other car parks, we come off as an eye-walking £20,000 each, affordable indeed only to a wealthy few. How I wish I'd invested in a double parking in the town. I'd be quite new. It is not the job of government to get money from the people who fund it. It is the job of government to provide services to the community. This is a blatant attempt at profiteering, presumably in a desperate burst of cash, to no doubt spend more money in this next year. The provision of more parking for locals is not a long-term environmental objective either. The most significant link between cars and the environment is not the number of cars, but the type of car being driven on our street. I've already discussed at some length the need to move to cleaner cars, and some of the measures required, and yet people should be encouraged to walk or cycle when that activity is made more pleasant. But we all have different circumstances and different needs where transport is concerned, and the demand for parking exists. It is not acceptable that government should be cashing in on this demand. Moving on swiftly from parking, which is a problem for some, but not all of us. It must be an election year, because finally we put a library service into the place. Too little too late, and it's laughable to hear a minister talk of government's library services programme, unless he means a programme where once every 4 years we get a bit of rate and services to go by the election. We do need a programme to fix our roads, but it is not acceptable. Services deteriorate rapidly through a combination of poor repairs and volume of traffic, not least all the lines associated with construction. I wonder what proportion of the premium paid to government for development goes towards fixing roads around the development. Not much, I suspect, but the developer should be given more responsibility in this respect. The general state of disrepair does not only affect on the road, pavements are similarly in poor condition, rusted and uneven. Government is supposed to be encouraging cycling and walking. The lack of maintenance in so many places does the opposite. And sometimes we do a better job fixing up our roads and pavements, and since it's time as we improve the air quality on our streets, it does not even seem fair to ask people to walk or cycle. A cycle lane for a main street to Ireland town, which most people don't understand the rules of, is not the solution. It's an accident waiting to happen. In some cases, as in the central leaders, already have happened. Let's really create an environment where such activities are amenable, and I'm certain that the rest will follow. In the same vein, let's make sure that our streets are clean, and that they stay clean. The Minister for the Environment said that the streets were sparkling after awarding the new street cleaning contract. That hasn't really happened. We still rely on rain to do most of the work. Some of the old equipment being new. Recycle the dust, sucking it at one end and spewing it out the other without a screen for greater impact. Even rebuilt car parks are not being cleaned or maintained. I was taken through the Engineerland car park recently with so many breakages that are not being repaired and a general poor state of cleanliness. The lift of the town was not working, neither was the escalator in the other direction that we went. So the car park was being used as a public thoroughfare. The same can be said in Midtown car park, where upkeep seems very poor. Is that a principle the government has chosen for its flagship project? Sells them, and then forget about the cost of maintenance and cleaning? It really isn't good enough, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask government to review if Booster is supposed to be delivering cleaning and maintenance services at each site, and I'm sure the contractor, or make sure the contractor is
aware that services are not currently up to the required standards. Rescue is still piling up along Main Street every evening. Recycle bins are often filled to overflowing. Arguably, the latter is a sign of success. But it is also a sign that we're not keeping a pace of progress. Greater investment is required to deliver results, and in the meantime, dirt, grime, and bad smells appear to be the order of the day. All this has worked towards making those necessary improvements to encourage people away from their cars. However, the necessary deliverables are not being delivered by this government. They're doing a fine job in these areas with the result that Gibraltar has a bumpy and congested feel about it. We're small. That makes dealing with the likes of congestion more difficult, but it could make other things, like keeping the streets safe and clean, much easier. And if our economy is doing as well as government claims, then it would not be a problem. But it all seems to be going into the too difficult box. Which is surprising, because the government with the majority that this government has, with people who are living on all the difficult things, comfortable that its position is unassailable. Yet when it comes to making difficult decisions in these areas, it has balked. It's bottled it to use the vacuum. It has not delivered on the promises it made, let alone taken the opportunity to go beyond it. I think I come to some of this. No, I don't. The environmental emergency we face globally and locally is real. We've all agreed to that, but actions haven't followed on that. We need a change. We need courageous leadership to do what needs to be done. The intervention on the environment by CEO, who I understand is not being this afternoon, was very welcome, and I will agree with much of what he said. In particular, the major impact that actually our community has in the global environment, clearly very similar, and our impact, therefore, has to be used today. However, this could not deter us in any way. Because where we might be influential is in setting an example to the rest of the world. We could be a jurisdiction that is admired for its environmental programming, but we have a lot of catching up to do. Unfortunately, at the moment, we are far from moving in this respect. We really must do better, and we can do better, but we need to have the courage to do so. Finally, Mr. Speaker, I would like to thank yourself. Mr. Martinez, the Director of the House of Commons, for the help and assistance they've provided throughout the week. Thank you very much. The Honourable Albert. Mr. Speaker, just wanted to be clear to myself, I'm a cheerleader. I'm very proud to be a cheerleader. And to see the incredible work that this government's done over the last few years and getting ready for what's coming in the rest of the year. This is because I'm sure that it's able to run the government of work to the fact that it is the next year, because it is hobbling for the past few years. And it's probably work on us while this government's been getting on with the work of looking after our people to carry every single section of our community down in Reno, Ohio. And it's very interesting to see that it's the one should now come to this camp and begin to lecture my good friend, Mr. Gupta, on the environment and on our wildlife, on our animals, green men, and everything else. But, Mr. Speaker, I think it's a dedicated and such a great problem and leave the environment and the wildlife to the public, that we can have a problem. Everybody is given to know that he's very good at this as a place when it comes to changing the environment. The work is done in the years. Absolutely taking incredible by comparison to anything that has been happening before. Even as the teacher, my good friend, another friend, is on personal speech on African anthems, loaded the praise on this type of thing, even which he is allowed. So, yes, Mr. Peter, I'm very pleased to say that I have every confidence in the work, the good work, that Mr. Peter does like when it comes to our environment. And to come for our wildlife and the environment. I to my family has been involved in problems around this for a very long time. Portland Heights, your father, King's Wharf, King 27, King 29, King 31. And it's important. When we talk about direct and connection, and we talk about this time in the same breath, if you're a member of the GSD, you need to be careful what you're saying. A plan of welcome development was given to the development of the Victorious Youth by direct and attention. That is the GSD. And I see that in such figures, I would come out of mind when the GSD did develop education. I said, Mary, I know this. I know what about trying to make a good
always had this philosophy, even though it's only 3 years old. It's all true, Mr. Speaker, that every single thing we have done in that book is exactly the same thing that they used to do in that book.
Thank you.
Thank you. so we put the like rather more boring which is doing with the beginning of part of my progressive figure. I want to focus about the quality of the fear of big people. One, to complete the message of the full program with introduction to the financial services bill, and I'm grateful to the Lord's decision, who I was engaging with in connection and have been accepted that bill as passage from Parliament. Two, to progress our own sense of advantage of government and interactive to our return to market post December 2020. And three, to continue to work in the private sector to review and improve our product line and to get out and tell the world what we have to offer. I thank you for the service of speaker for the most significant progress in each of the areas, and will be continuing to enjoy the confidence and support of our entire sector, including each of the men. With regard to the details of the day, I must thank the Finance Centre Council, its chairman, Mark Wells, and the committee for the interaction and valuable counsel these past 12 months on all things financial services. They are an important stakeholder, and their input is always welcome and constructive, even when we do not agree. The government is now going to public to find the services bill. The modernization, consolidation, and improvement of our over 80 pieces of legislation coming into life. As we are introducing the DMC, the Decision Making Committee, which will be comprised of independent persons from the local sector who will be the committee responsible for the implementation of any enforcement action or policy. The trust and balance of the regulator has been widely welcomed in the private sector and especially by the Finance Centre Council. This is just one of many changes that have been introduced to the sector as we are working our way through with it. We intend to pass the bill with support of honourable members and then bring it into effect after the summer, allowing the sector to be fully acquainted before we implement. We will, of course, continue to work with the sector and your members of it on the bill throughout this period to correct any defects or deficiencies. For example, Mr. Speaker, the Finance of the Council has recently requested that a complaint procedure be introduced on the conduct of the regulator, and we will be introducing the change. I will first thank the sector for the support of economic change. Consultation started in 2017, and we have worked through with the sector many of the new parts of the bill, taking their views and counsel into account as we vote before together. I will thank the entire team that has helped me, Ben Schumer, Trevor Cotterella, and Jimmy Tipping, who have been the core team with drafters working on this project over the last few years. When it comes to the United States market, we've been made aware that this has already been agreed and announced. We have recently been working with the UK government to agree the UK access to the period post December 2020 and to ensure that we enjoy regulatory alignment with the United Kingdom. A contract was agreed at the JMC meetings, which we're not going to be covered, in London, and to ensure effective retention as the object of the review to provide market penetration of devoted insurance funds to the United Kingdom. The objective of the review was to compare the outcomes of the devoted system of regulation with that of the UK and to highlight any areas that may require further work and attention. These areas have been identified, and we continue to work with HMT to align the outcomes. We have worked in very close cooperation with the team of HM Treasury, with whom we've developed an excellent relationship. And I would actually sincerely thank all of the HMT team, but especially John McCartney, Anna Mannick, and Becky Morrison, for their frank and considerate approach to this work. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, we're also working with drafting more relevant legislation by the UK in terms of sensitive instruments provided to continue financial services accessed by Gibraltar. In all areas of possible utility, in the event of a hard Brexit, and these have been published now in the United Kingdom. In Gibraltar, a similar draft of exercise was carried out to allow for a typical UK civil market access to move on to service to such an event. I must thank the local team of professionals who have supported this work and thankfully to Peter and Alana, Peter and Lisa, and finally, eventually, Peter Ricci. That support has been a valuable group for us and the team of treasury in getting this important work right. I would like to speak to all of our team members, and I would like to thank you for working with us and supporting us in every aspect of our work with the United Kingdom, and especially in all aspects of our UK passport and local financial services. There is a lot of work in these areas, and we cannot have support, and I'm really grateful to you. Mr. Speaker, in terms of this development, we have always worked closely
that can improve our product line, to write them local, and to work together in identifying new lines of business. The rail is a manner that is safeguarded, efficient, and compliant with our international obligations. This year we have achieved this better goal, and our cyberpunk team is in the final stages. We have talked to all the sector representatives for their active work and is prepared. This is because we have also worked very hard to ensure the rail understands what we are doing by focused marketing to our target jurisdictions. It is very important to build the promise of voting from the areas that we are targeting and this will, of course, continue. As a speaker, the policy framework has continued to grab much attention around the world, and I am delighted to announce that there are three plans for the license, and that there are 8 license in principle that seem to be completed. There are other plans at early stages of the process, and we are also aware of complementary applications launched for other financial services activities, including e-money institutions and banking. There is undoubtedly more to come, and exciting times lie ahead. We will continue to work with and lead in the sector, and I look forward to making further announcements in the coming months. As the speaker of our last address, we have posted a board of propositions to the panel to London, Manchester, Amsterdam, Brussels, San Francisco, Zurich, Tangier, and through our first devoted England fair, Berlin, Zurich, Washington, New York, Santiago, Dubai, and Bahrain. The pace is unrelenting, and it will remain so as we continue to improve the significant return on our investment. I'm delighted, and this has been a total way by my many colleagues at the University of Georgia, including the Ministry of Languages and Education for the Bible Group, came into existence. This is a collaborative endeavor between the government, university, and private powers active in this sector. The small and big level of the policy of the members, I think, is a time to be invited into all levels of educational forces and changes, and on the new service basis to rival members of the teaching profession in Gibraltar. In May 2019, the first particular competence in doctoring smart contracts is committed, and I must take the opportunity to recognize and thank those private sector firms that have joined us in giving hugely of their time and considerable expertise to the many of these forces supporting the efforts of colleagues in the university. We will continue this great work next year. This is the last year of the milestone of the creation of the Board of Associated and Technology Grant earlier this year. This body, now both the reporting members, and it's really great to ask the school representative bodies to create relationships in which exchange of ideas and best practices can occur. And getting to see that there will be more information in the coming weeks and months in that regard. And to see that our regret this year is that we have not yet been able to come certainly. I hope we'll be able to be quite grateful because the rest of the multilateral framework has been placed and operated by now. The world we seek to regulate has changed significantly. We are working with the leader to adopt the change of direction on more than one occasion. I am confident that we will now have and will deliver an appropriate bill that is fit for purpose for supporting the industry goals and ambitions. As a speaker, we also want to present the structure which is both part of the association of the power government and, of course, the business development. They are great partners of the government and fully understanding of the power of working closely together for the benefit of the jurisdiction. My thanks to Mr. James Badgley and Jim Barber and the rest of the executive committee for participating. This is because the global public insurance sector has continued to perform well over the last 12 months. The global insurance to an level of £1 billion of gross premium will come from Gibraltar over the last 12 months. As reported in the Gibraltar Insurance Center last September, Agri Advantage and part of the big distribution category were two of the largest and most profitable insurers ranking UK motor business in 2017, and their 2018 results were equally impressive. The acquisition of Market Center's various insurance companies by Qatar Re, which was announced in January of last year, closed soon after my last speech last July. Qatar Re now writes over $750 million of gross premium income against two Gibraltar insurers, and private credit growth is expected in the next few years. Finally, on insurance, Mr. Speaker, we also work with big insurance and investors, contributing to the state of the wider and more flexible management general agency, offering tons of volunteer received insurance language NGOs. We hope to create nothing to encourage new NGOs who are supported by any local insurer to establish in Gibraltar. This initiative also aims to focus on attractive and effective businesses that can leverage options in vibrant fintech sector. I would like to join the Chief Financial Advisory Team at Gibraltar
international bank. At that time, and in times of much uncertainty, the entire economy went hawkish and spectacular to see. The achievement was significant by the huge decline of the work of Ryan Forrester, the CEO, and Dominic Sinclair, the CEO, in making this happen, of course, with the full support of the entire staff. My consultant, Martin Ransom, came on board and is very directly for that excellent stewardship of this institution. The decision of the government in 2015 to deliver this bank was inspired and necessary and an investment which benefits the whole of Gibraltar. The people are also mentioned our 2019 mobile evaluation. The huge amount of work has gone to prepare for this evaluation, both in the public and private sector, and it has been a real and genuine partnership. This was the same way we would do our jurisdiction plan, and I would thank all those involved in the excellent applied and the excellent work of Dale Barney and Superintendent Edward Robbins. The work is ongoing, and of course, we are committed to the UN Federation, which we can work with to continue to improve our compliance and remedy any shortcomings effectively and efficiently. Mr. Speaker, thank you for the table, the Senior Board of Finance, for continued plans and excellent work. I want to show the significant support to the review. In particular, I want to thank the support of Senator for all of his work on DMT. He has been outstanding in his endeavor to promote our jurisdiction of Washington, and I am most grateful to him. My thanks to Tim Holmes for continuing our work in football insurance, and I'm thankful to the fortunate to have this strong and dedicated team with us. This is my time to begin with this. The combination of remote and land-based sectors provides employment and assistance to some 2,800 individuals. This, Mr. Speaker, is an increase in last year and almost double what it was in 2011. The sector continues to make a very significant contribution to the economy in terms of corporate tax, bill writing, and government charges and fees. And the government division continues to provide significant value for money with modest operating costs of only $340,000. I am grateful to Andrew Ryman, our Gambling Commissioner, and his team for doing the simple work so professionally and with such confidence. Andrew is a joy to work with, and we're proud and look for the approach to our challenges and opportunities, both well for our future. As I found in my speech last year, Mr. Speaker, the base of the charge of gambling tax has been transitioned to a more progressive base. The BTC operated by 0.15% of actual growth and renewals, which is untapped. Licensing for operating the river, to more popular effect, the cost of regulation. And overall, the change is broadly budget neutral. We are grateful to the operators and cooperation in transitioning to this new system, and I would like to extend my thanks to the licensing team for the way they have coped with what was a significant and challenging administrative change. Last year, I tackled the uncertainty caused by business and those concerns. With reasonable savings of sale, we continue to work with operators to support them in managing their business. And I thank you, Mr. Speaker, to those operating the rate of a huge effort to maintain some of the staff who have gone by 65 and recruited them to their financial shelter, particularly for the ones that have been to leave. There is a reporting to this chronicle reflecting that work. Because this year we spent considerable time with operators, particularly our business principals, the growing contingent proposal, subsequent changes, and guaranteed continued access to EU markets. Speaker, as the leader of the GSD treated recently, there is no link between the tax treaty and the move of parts of the business of 365 to Gibraltar. But where? We should be in the process of being congratulated for all the added that is spending to fight for the terms of the tax treaty, which is the Speaker who has done absolute nonsense. Also, Mr. Speaker, most operators are choosing to leave critical last year and do not want to operate from Gibraltar. Gibraltar has historically provided a significant growth as the supportive business and tax environment for those operators and the assessment of the recent corporation income reflected a renewed confidence in our jurisdiction. Operators will in the end make their own decisions based on their own assumptions, their own strategic plans, and their own interpretation of the policy on the future. They may be influenced by large operators' activities, tax status, expansion into new markets, and perhaps just the fact that they believe doing something will be better than doing nothing. That is the real world that the speaker promised. But what we do, Mr. Speaker, is the authority of the law, because we will not find in the support of government, in the support of regulators, or
more straightforward and fair political competition and legal bodies to conduct the businesses than in Gibraltar.
Thank you. we have one consumer customer facing system. God, the day, the second system is what we find. We will all know the connected and automated. This will not be easy. We are dealing with trouble and integration as we speak. Change is because of the world. But we all know it's right to invest in technology and it will not be out from the gifts and benefits of working effectively and effectively. Once we have the final system in place, which we expect to happen shortly, the digital part of the budget will then commence to run. The entire department, as my promise to the committee management, will be first. As part of our pilot testing, it should be fully operational by the summer. We can touch office and part of the VHQ will follow after that. This will be the first way the department document will be prepared. The Royal Diploma, the rest of the department, which will include details of the civil state of the registration office, the rest of the criteria, and the government education and the department of the world. The introduction of the digital transformation program creates new ways of working for the public service and allows citizens and businesses to interact with government systems in ways that are neither available or possibly integrated before. The implementation of the systems represents a quantum leap forward to royalty. Because the new government is an enormous challenge, the rest of the support and implementation team joins the more calls of the public service, including the group, our own IT and IT. The generation of workfulness of everyone involved in the project is exemplary. Speaker, I am grateful to Julie and the team of Care and Donna from my office for their complete dedication and engaging and managing this project and all the time departments and those within and outside the public sector. Their effort has been remarkable and I am sincerely grateful to you. The message made has been simply outstanding. As Speaker, to conclude, I want to thank my secretary, Liz Mercedes, and the rest of my team of ministry. They look after me with great care and attention and, of course, professionalism. And I am truly grateful to them. Mr. Speaker, I am also grateful to the Council of Persons and Advisors, and indeed to the remainder of the staff to the course of the year.
Thank you.
and Dr. Elaine Bell, I've seen the role of forensic and medical examiners working closely with the Royal Commission for Medical Support in Japan. Since that announcement, which may have predicted how vital to the work of the IBP will soon be able to become. The only work that soon became clear was the result on the 13th November of last year, a third VP, Dr. Sam Morrison, was one of our key attending GPs, drawing the SME team. I'm very proud to speak of the work of the teams in support of 24 hours a day, every day of the year, by our three GPs working on an on-call motor sequence. The management of the requirement for more duty to the for the assistance of a fully trained forensic medical examiner who are ever available to represent and welcome improvements. On the 4th of October last year, BCP, Dr. Valerie Flores, Dr. Nicole Mondello, and Dr. Bill Fulton were allocated time to think of an alternative to their consulting and assistance to gain a deeper understanding of pediatric work. This experience and developed interest by the anticipation of the opening of the Children's Primary Care Centre this summer, where GPs will be working closely with the pediatric teams. Two more GPs, Dr. Martin Bill and Dr. Danina Martin, joined the team in January of this year, thereby making five GPs more dedicated time to enhanced care for our children. Because in September 2017, the average pediatric health service needs for the additional need have been meeting and agreeing with the GPA teams. The two groups that form the council advocate for members of our community have more specific and additional needs for healthcare. These new things have helped identify how to build our services that require improvements, such as the recruitment of a sailor nurse who commenced monitoring COVID demand last year, the implementation of a computerized boarding system at an Inverness hospital and at the primary care centre to immediately notify GPA staff, including clinicians, family staff, of any known serious medical condition or disability as soon as an individual health contact record is accessed, and 15 of educational talks given by representatives from the council to create awareness, empathy, and a greater understanding by business and staff of how it seems to be a service feature with additional needs in healthcare. Over 60% of all BCC staff and their attendants gave available assessments with benefits available by this year. We speak of an opportunity to publicly thank the members of the Patient Advocacy Council for so graciously giving of their time to help us improve our services. In July last year, building of the improved software deposit system to prevent to register patients individual and individual GP commands. As of the end of April this year, over 12,000 patients already visited the PCC have already been registered with specific GP. The PCC registration team also updates quite a detailed for patients to improve good communication with the health services and maximize the effectiveness of the monitoring system and text message reminders. Within the next few weeks, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Assistant will have a huge privilege to inaugurate the world's very first and dedicated Children's Primary Care Centre in the surrounding grounds of the Inverness Hospital. The modern and dynamic centre will combine the full range of children's medical services in an environment designed with children in mind, staffed by specialist personnel, general practitioners, and community and allied health professionals, all of which, Mr. Speaker, will be dedicated to the youngest members of our community. With the honourable chief minister has already pointed out, the opening of this new, specifically dedicated medical centre for children is a flagship pledge that will be fulfilled in the coming week. Additionally, following the announcement last year, works are well underway for the building of a new, purpose-built primary care centre, also adjacent to the Inverness Hospital. The brand new three-story building is set to be inaugurated after the summer months. The modern and future-proof design provides a community with a more patient-friendly centre where wide-ranging and comprehensive primary care services will be delivered, and other services policy will be delivered after the summer. Mr. Speaker, I think it is worth noting that these significant reforms and improvements across our primary care services have been implemented while at the same time as spending GPs have attended to over 110,000 medical appointments in the calendar year of 2018 alone. To repeat, Mr. Speaker, there are over nearly 3 times the population, which meant placing any complaints about appointments properly into perspective. And this is without mentioning the daily average of 46 times appointments, which is a remarkable feat at any level. Some colleagues care are used as imaginatively as ever to secondary care. The discussion continues to embark on an ambitious program of transformation to ensure that our community receives healthcare of high standard locally, wherever possible, or through one of our partner healthcare providers. This is underpinned by the recent launch of the Change of Constitution and Values and the setting up of a clinical governance and an informatics department. It is made the keenest personal presence in court once again, Mr. Speaker, yet not a single such cooperation has been cancelled due to their shortages even during the busiest time of year. The Judiciary employing a multi-agency approach, together with the TLS and the care agency, have maintained an impressive daily average of 63 available beds at the various hospitals in the last year, reaching a record high of 86 available beds for one occasion in April of this year. This is, Speaker, while carrying out 758 surgical surgeries and 244 emergency surgeries between January and May of this year, up from the operations carried out last year. Further, Speaker, we have secured agreements with Tunica and Rosibed and Abaca, locally known as Pandora, to implement an hospital group between primary known healthcare providers for testing services and the conclusions ongoing with the fourth provider. Our clinical governance team has been intimately involved in our negotiations to ensure that our patients receive testing services that are in line with the values set out in our constitution and achieving the best value for our investors. With respect to complaints, there was a vocal reduction of 50% by zero, Mr. Speaker, in the number of forward complaints received in the calendar year of 2018. I keep repeating to my team member that this means three, that we are far away from getting the mark and we need to continue to do better. We see continuing patients requiring all the testing, taking them of access, while the UK platform states, drawing the NHS blood transfusion service organ delivery speed. Our first two patients have had kidney transplants to the UK since the new system was rolled out. Further, speaking about these significant investments in our mental health services, which have resulted in a number of important improvements and reforms, including the recruitment of additional consultant psychiatrists, increasing the complement from 2.5 to 4.5 in the last 18 months, which is a record high for the NHS. The recruitment of the very first clinician dedicated solely to mental health services, and commenced employment in February of this year. The recruitment of an additional consultant clinical psychologist who commenced employment in October of last year. The provision of counseling and services was also enhanced with the Chartered Counselors, Psychologists, and Counselor who are based at the CPC, increasing their sessions an extra day per week each. In February of last year, a 2-bedroom apartment for the purpose of providing supported accommodation was commissioned by a Manchester government at the Bolton. This initiative has facilitated smooth transitional discharges of former inpatients and interviews. These individuals have since moved on from the previous state of the flat to complete independence in their own flat, including visits from the community mental health services. This must be the service, Mr. Speaker, which will be entirely possible. Based on my colleagues and my Sacramento, who possesses a deep empathy and heartfelt understanding of how to best support the most vulnerable members of our community. The commencement in January of last year of a psychiatric service for children and young people in our community, known as the Gibraltar Young Minds Team. This service is dedicated solely for children and young adults, includes a locally based child and adolescent psychiatrist, two child and adolescent psychologists, and a visiting service for conflict behavior management, another service for Gibraltar. The average waiting time to see a psychologist at the NHS has cancer once again leads the way crazy. On each doctor or a nurse in their emergency service operating 10 days a week from 8 in the morning to 8 at night. In investigation, people abuse is more available to provide assessments, reports, and referrals to those patients and their loved ones. This includes hospitals that not all patients will need to attend to ID as a valid, which I am sure is enormously welcome. My team and I continue to work closely with individuals, families, and support groups in a bid to improve our services to meet the evolving mental health needs of our community.
Complement
on the road or to ambulance service to better meet the needs of our community. Because if that shows the general data protection regulations, it will fund an enhanced legal obligation to protect our patients' data. The GDPR has taken robust measures to ensure we are compliant with the law and give our patients assurance that their personal data is held securely. The GDPR will carry out regular audits to ensure compliance with the data protection obligations and continue to work closely with the GDPR. The GDPR now comes to finance and procurement. As all of them was known, the 1890 content from GHS stood at £124.4 million, which is £3 million over the previous financial year, an increase of under 2.5%. This item, which was £5.7 million, over the original approved estimate of 2019 of under £18.7 million, covered the cost of the annual staff pay increase and a continuing investment in expansion and new major developments at the new primary care centre and treatment centre. We think it is important to continue to improve processes that will deliver more stringent budgetary control and financial balance. These initiatives include the implementation of new accounting systems. For the first, the GHS budget allocation for 1920 is £138 million, an 11% increase on the previous year's fund, which includes a contribution of £6.3 million from the Improvement and Development Fund to continue to invest in capital initiatives, such as putting out the soon to be opened and magnificent GHS facilities for the latest equipment. The financial projections indicate the GHS should continue to remain in allocating budget with monetary more than a fair and reasonable allocation to our health services. To this end, we will continue to hold monthly financial control meetings to embed processes we began 2 financial years ago and continually monitor spending. These meetings have facilitated increased collaboration between the GHS finance team and the organization as a whole in terms of spending and forward financial planning, thereby resulting in increased financial control and sustaining historical spending. For example, this is reflected by the in-depth amount spent in comparison to previous years of 8.8% in the last year, 2018, down to 4.9% in the last financial year. And having said that, to the account we want to hear, today I'm still far from satisfied. Ensuring that we have been counting on budget should be the next incentive price for the norm. Personally, Mr. Speaker, while I spend more than I should in one month, I will do this next month. And the patient needs to understand that it must be within the entirely reasonable and generous subsidy of the taxpayer. Moreover, the patient is by far financed by concerns in a universe where it is difficult to ours, where it is not asked to pay back what it has been spent. And therefore, the patient needs to remember moment to moment that a single penny of spent is 1 penny too many, because it is our collective money as taxpayers, and we must continue to do better. As I express my continuing concerns over controlled expenditure, Mr. Speaker, quite apart from having demonstrated that the annual overspend has been reduced year on year to 4.9% in the last financial year, the second biggest overspend in the last financial year was due to the high cost on which we currently procure our pharmaceuticals due to our limitations when it comes to economies of scale. It also gives me great pleasure to announce that we have received a commitment from the UK government for the GMP to be included in the NHS drug framework at the next round of negotiations, including this time between the NHS and its suppliers. In the meantime, the GMP will be granted exceptionally special dispensation by the UK government to access these specialised and related medications by a large NHS drug, such as Guy and St Thomas's Foundation Trust, one of our own partners in the UK. This is to enable the GMP to have regular and reliable supplies and ensure that we access life-threatening medications at the most competitive prices. I cannot overstate the importance of this development. on our ability to better control expenditure on pharmaceuticals, and it is a concrete and direct product of remaining into the Honourable the Chief Minister and the Honourable the Deputy Chief Minister held at the highest level of the UK, supported by the extraordinary work of the government's residents. These developments have also come from the series of meetings between the Chief Medical Director now and top officials within the UK Department of Health, underpinned by contacts we have held with my ministerial counterparts in Westminster, including the Secretary of Health and Social Care, and the former Parliament and the Secretary of State for Health and Responsibility and Medicine. Speaking of stores, I think various hospitals are currently undergoing a major revamp. Introduction of an open inventory management system at some various hospital stores will significantly improve current processes and controls, assuring the collection and distribution of stock-to-do commands and minimizing any possible waste. New stock-to-up systems managed by the stores team are implemented across hospital wards in May. This provides the added and immensely welcome benefit of the leading nursing staff from duty in respect of stock locations. From all of the above, Mr. Speaker, I do not think that anyone can seriously doubt this government's will to leave no stone unturned in improving our healthcare services to our people. Finally, to all of our healthcare professionals and all the other staff in the UK, Mr. Speaker, thank you. Mr. Speaker, I turn to the Care Agency, and I would like to start by speaking about the exciting changes that will be implemented in the area of disability services. Children and adults with learning disabilities and additional needs are more likely to have a wider range of physical and mental health needs than individuals for the general population. The Care Agency allows the local parents and family members of children and adults with learning disabilities, as well as the relevant support organizations, to gather their personal accounts and better understand the challenges they face on a day-to-day basis. The Care Agency and I have understood the need for improvements in the way services to the family and sector of our community deliver. It is for the previous speaker that the emergency family group, led by the Care Agency and I, was formed to consider ways in which services within education and the health and social care sectors can work together and recommend reforms to better meet the needs of the community. The working group has also met with other stakeholders, including the youth services, to further inform our work. It is important for a person with a learning disability and their family to know that there is a supportive family place or in which the child learns. One of the major issues raised by families is that pediatric health services seek delivery when children reach the age of 16 years. This includes service delivery to children with disabilities. Families typically enjoy by their own statements a fantastic multidisciplinary team approach around child, consisting of consultants and other allied professionals, which then eventually disappears on the system's birthday as they transition to working with a GP in a very busy primary care setting. As a result, Mr. Speaker, it gives me great pleasure to note that the aims of pediatric services for children with learning disabilities and visual needs will be raised to 18 years. There will also be an increase in the services provided by the pediatric allied professionals. I do not think that we can overstate the importance of this expansion of service provision to persons with disabilities and their families. The Children's Primary Care Centre will house numerous services, offering a single point of access to children's services, eliminating the need for parents or carers to navigate from one professional to another. The Working Group continues to consider the eight criteria for use of these services for those over 18 years, so that there can be smooth transition into the later adulthood. The Disability Review Working Group found that respite parents and carers of children with learning disabilities were dependent on resources deployed from the Care Agency Children's Residential Services. This did not always enable the service to provide respite as and when needed. I am very pleased to note, therefore, that we have increased the budget for respite services to ensure that more children and their families are able to access the necessary support and respite services when they require it. We have a responsibility to ensure the mental and emotional health of those family members who care for children with disabilities. ability. We must care for our carriers. They are our final champions and they do need our support. Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, we will employ an additional social worker to work exclusively with children with disabilities and their families. Up until now, this area of work has been conducted in addition to other areas of children's social services. This particular with the whole family through the many processes they often encounter when accessing services. This social work will help families in accessing multi-agency support and bridge the gap from assessment of additional needs to the appropriate support packages. An inclusive venue for refugees is also essential. To the extent, the Working Group continues to explore appropriate venues to cater for daytime, overnight, and weekend respite separate to the current children's residential service. Communicating the boundaries of learning disability, the Working Group identified that resources were required to support adults in accessing meaningful activities so they could participate in community events. Young adults do not always want to be chaperoned by parents or family members when participating in such events. This is typical of any person trying to attain independence. However, because of their vulnerability, adults with learning disabilities require a certain level of supervision. It also continues to say that the budget has been increased to address this need and thereby provide for paid carers who are trained in delivery of support service to members in mentoring service. This new area of service will assist in enhancing adult safety and support networks and help these individuals build skills that will serve in the area of leisure activities and also, in some cases, in employment. Welcome, Speaker. I would like to report that we will also increase our complement by a second social worker who will work exclusively with adults with learning disabilities and their families. This social worker will coordinate care packages, continually assess the needs of the individual and the degree of support required by family members. The social worker will also work with the Deaf Support Centre, Dr. Home, and Community Trade and other government agencies. To ring fence this particular to work solely in this kind of service will create more effective channels of communication between the different services, families, and around the person with learning disability. Speaking of adults now enjoying better healthcare and living longer, there has been an increase in attendances at Eastern Bangladesh's Sports Center. This center now offers service to a wide range of services in both in age and learning disability. Both the Education Department and the Care Agency have acknowledged this, and discussions on transitions from one service to another have been reviewed and improved. The disability reviews review continues because we have several ground to cover. And I would like to stress, Mr. Speaker, that we are at the initial stages of delivering on new development and we will continue to strive to provide the gold standard service. Increasingly, the Care Agency has been working to provide early intervention for families and young students. In the case of children's services, the family and community centre has been instrumental in facilitating access to the support. This service has been influential in bridging the gap between child protection and social need, providing children and families with increased opportunities to succeed and achieve their success. In addition, the family and community centre continues to offer a wide variety of activities with 1,313 children and 1,401 parents and carers fully attended during the last financial year. Importantly, Mr. Speaker, a parent child assessment unit has also been created. The area of service provides residential parents and child assessments for those who have suffered or are at risk of suffering significant harm and are on child protection plan. The program has family skills and the parents' skills and adopt positive strategies in their day to day parenting responsibilities. Mr. Speaker, we have two safeguarding boards led by the Care Agency, namely the Child Protection Committee and the Safeguarding Adult Board. The newly constituted Safeguarding Adult Board was established this year, and the Children Protection Committee has already been working successfully as an executive committee for some time. The Safeguarding Adult Board focuses on issues relating to the safeguarding of vulnerable adults, ensuring that the appropriate safeguarding arrangements are in place.
hold or to rest in expression that governs agencies to live timely and appropriate responses to abuse or neglect of care. Another area of great importance, and tangible safeguarding, is that of public protection. Two federal therapists have been employed with care agencies to work for this therapeutic treatment and providing the right kinds of interventions to such a failure and by public duty. The standard for treating interventions with families and offenders will also be provided, and in special delivery of therapy services will be offered to persons who have suffered those offences. The care in the community is an essential service provided by the care agency, and in the same care continues to be provided to assist vulnerable, mentally, or infirm persons at home. A total of 434 individuals have received a palliative care this year, reflecting an increase of 127 in the last financial year. Given the success of supporting persons in the community, the domiciliary care budget has been increased so that further support can be provided to more individuals within their own home. Another service increase has been the opening on an extra day of the Waterport Day Centre for the Elderly, providing a total of 40 additional patients with 20 new clients attended. In conclusion, Mr. Speaker, the Care Agency must continue to develop at a fast pace in keeping with the evolving needs of our community. The agency held the right to family life and privacy, safely within its core values, and is planned to provide supporting care to ensure individuals and their family members can enjoy well-being and support services in the community. The Care Agency will continue to work to ensure that these important services develop and are reviewed. So the safety care provided is meaningful, provides the relevant support, and enables its users to participate in society. Mr. Speaker, I also, of course, wish to thank all the various teams of the care agency. Mr. Speaker, we spend our time to the DRS. The number of GP sessions available to the elderly residential services has been increased by an extra 30 hours per week. Emergency or end-of-life care can therefore be dealt with in a familiar environment, also reducing acute hospital admissions. Additional in-house services have also been implemented, whereby the medical team perform regular clinic across the lower site to review the treatment of diabetic residents. A similar feature has been introduced, the new residents can smoke it in other external cardio devices with the support of the GHA cardiologist, geriatrician, and repeat. In addition, the DRS teams have introduced a coagulation clinic for residents on anticoagulant therapy and investigated to the house, without the need to send blood samples or children in the same results. Further, Mr. Speaker, medical volume has seen significant improvements into the main kitchen, dining room, day room, lobby, reception, and chapel, with the most expensive palestinian designs and furniture having been implemented across the whole community areas. Renovation continues in phases in order to minimize any possible disruption to residents. I must thank the Gibraltar Environment and Dementia Society for the generous donations which have gone towards these very welcome improvements. Finally, sir, an informed effective course has been provided for support staff, steadfast domestic and administrative staff, so that everyone working within the DRS is at the minimum level of dementia training and awareness. Mr. Speaker, the staff of Beijing Science and Joint Manager of Residential Homes, together with that of the Bella Vista Day Center, continue to provide kind and compassionate care to our dear elderly. We regularly receive recommendations from the community in this respect. From me, Mr. Speaker, to all the elderly residential staff, thank you. Mr. Speaker, I now turn to my executive portfolio and will commence with the Royal Gibraltar Police. Following on from the enforcement structure under President HR orders, the RGP, together with government, have commenced a phased approach to increase the number of police officers for the organisation. 10 additional police officers will be recruited over this financial year, providing the RGP with much welcome and capacity to deal with the conflict. Of modern day crimes to which Gibraltar is inactively exposed. The GRP will also rearrange its structure so as to increase frontline policing capacity
quite remain an effective and efficient workforce. Lastly, as we can improve international football matches, which require an effective command structure and have every player in front of the school day are equipped for any potential public situation. This requires significant funding to the game, which has also enhanced the article's capability to respond to public support of incidents generally. The RCP has increased its vehicle capacity this year, also at a significant investment. Briefly, the response to its nearby vans and a police canine van crisis. This increases the organization's ability to deploy officers to their members on a different level. The officers of the RCP are constantly at the forefront of fighting national and international crime, and there have been many success stories over the past year. Further, Mr. Speaker, the RCP in consultation with my ministry introduced the drugs and rights of the country. The Commissioner, senior RCP official Bilal, volunteered to provide samples even before the commencement of the policy to demonstrate its non-invasive nature. The RCP was not able to test its officers for substance or alcohol misuse and have made it required to address any possible reading. So far, 25 tests have been conducted, all providing negative readings. The GFW plays a critical role in protecting Gibraltar's financial center. The Gibraltar Financial Intelligence Unit generates intelligence reports for both domestic and foreign law enforcement agencies, which assist in detaining terrorists and criminals from operating their illicit businesses. GFW received almost 2,000 suspicious activity reports last year, reporting entities can estimate staff securely via FINIS, the new online reporting system. GFW has provided training to approximately 180 money laundering reporting offices with support of the Port Association of Compliance Officers. As the money laundering and lending water continues, the GFW have continued their internal training with the UK National Crime Agency, the Financial Action Task Force in Dublin, and have recently attended a high level Financial Action Task Force money laundering training workshop. The rental assets in Tel Aviv, Israel. The GFW continues to develop its own anti-money laundering and terrorist financing capability, but is also raising awareness of its unique outreach program, Project Next. This targets the private sector and covers terrorist financing, financing risk of customers, and the financing of people trafficking. The GFW has been another unremarkable year for the prison service, with no major occurrences or disturbances to report. Incidents of prisoner indiscipline have mostly been for minor offences and remain similar to the previous year, approximately 3 reports per month. The average daily report for the last financial year stood at 52 prisoners, up from 47 prisoners in 2017. The prison facilities continue to be worthy of inmates. Last year, on average, a quarter of the prison population attended education and education classes. Inmates also made good use of counseling services available to them, but a third of the prison population regularly attended narcotic knowledge. The initiatives in the prisons to carry services include an increased supervision of general and drug counseling and rehabilitation. Counseling services include the five-step program, the cycle of change program, and aftercare and support post-release. That these improved services will better place offenders on their way to rehabilitation and successfully integrate into society and thus reduce the rate of recidivism. The most effective prison strategy is to combine both elements of counseling and rehabilitation together with enforcement and deterrence. To this end, and in order to enhance the enforcement and deterrence elements, prison service will soon complete its work to introduce mandatory drug testing for all prisoners. This includes an unexpectedly ambitious project for the prison, which has taken some time to develop. The work is involved in the consideration of draft legislation, mechanisms for the support of justice and peace in the education process, consulting with suitable and recognized UK Home Office of the Laboratory, developing a comprehensive policy document, the introduction of software support and the training of prison officers. Significantly, the National Prison would also engage an additional counselor to enhance the current support to inmates experiencing issues with regards to the misuse of drugs. important and long, and that the particular things announced that many can drive something more to make this year. I will make an announcement in due course on APP of operation in the to commence. The global program concerns the monthly testing of prisoners who are randomly selected by the specially designed software. The program will also include testing where the reasonable suspicion of consumption arises for the purposes of risk assessment upon arrival at the medical prison and frequent testing thereafter. Those prisoners who will refuse to be tested or test positive will go to the existing internal screening process of prison. And depending on the particular circumstances of each case, the matter will be adjudicated by either the prison superintendent or the justice of the peace. It is hoped that the introduction of this robust testing policy will further deter substance abuse in prison, and together with improvements in rehabilitation and other existing measures, will also provide a consolidated and comprehensive drug strategy that will have a positive impact. In respect of resources, the three-year implementation plan of the Green Staffing Increase continues to progress. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to confirm the recent introduction of an additional post of Chief Officer, which will undoubtedly serve to bolster the business management structure. The current improvement plan will see a significant augmentation to the resources of the single unit of prison. It will provide for improved opportunities of career progression for officers working in that section. With regard to training, this has been expanding year on year, affording staff greater opportunities to develop the skills and specializations. Over the past 4 months, officers have undergone specialist training in the UK in a variety of areas, including mainly drug testing, working with young people, and mental health awareness. Local training has included sex offender risk management, emergency first aid, and unarmed defense tactics. Upcoming specialist training in the United Kingdom would include control and restraint training for inspectors. Prison management continues to be held to account by the prison board, the members of which undertake the responsibility with determination. The speaker may take this opportunity to continue to thank the members of the prison board for their time and dedication. Prison management remains committed to providing a safe and secure environment both for inmates and staff alike, to teaching inmates of humanity, encouraging self-respect, and helping everyone to be more abiding and live their lives, both in custody and upon release. The service is fully committed to the care and rehabilitation of inmates and to their successful reintegration into society. To this end, I wish to very heartily thank the United States management team and our prison officers. The speaker attempts to matter in driving legislation and speak on the most significant legislative project which have come to fruition over the last year. The speaker has also recorded the past laws to prescribe access and to enhance the legal assistance that may be provided to foreign prosecuting authorities in criminal matters. Legislation establishing the Office of Director of Public Prosecutions, habitually abbreviated to DPP, was passed on the 24th of July of last year. It also allows the DPP to undertake the day-to-day criminal work of serving him as an agent, while remaining subject to any instructions issued by the Attorney General. On the 20th of December, Parliament passed the Extradition Act, which enabled government to request the extension of the European Convention on Extradition and break calls to Gibraltar, to Gibraltar, therefore widening the scope of extradition from and to Gibraltar. The passing of this act stands in government's continuously planning in the event of a major event. At the same time, Parliament passed a mutual legal assistance Council of Europe Act, which enables the government to request extension to Gibraltar as a Council of Europe's convention on mutual legal assistance in criminal matters. And the passing of this act also stands in government's continuously planning in the event of a major event. Earlier this year, the House also legislated as a privilege of energy drinks to persons in 2016 years, requiring their prescription to display to the premises some energy drinks and prohibiting their fare in vending. The commandments were published on Latin relating to abortion, celibacy, and other reforms. Two of these bills have been published following the conclusion of the respective consultation processes, and I look forward to debating these in the House. So with that, I will not discuss these bills any further. In relation to the command of the Mr. Speaker, I went to the lab a lot with a very representation to see, and we promised to invite the girl to the court. As an agnostic speaker, the parents of the service of law will be provided a framework for altruistic charity. So, before I turn to the law courts, I must mention by name my meeting with the counsel, Mr. Carl Tenner, who since he joined me last year, has been to be one of the most conscientious, diligent, hardworking, and ethical justice with whom I have the pleasure to work. Not only has Carl kept up with a sometimes policy piece of work, but he has done so with good care and vim. I'm extremely grateful to him. And B. The speaker, I now turn to the organs. In teaching me that on the death of the Justice Service Commission, seven objectives of the peace have been recruited and appointed. This would require an entire complement of justices and a number of retirements. I'm sure that I would have been with them and ordering peace in the very best, and our thanks for the perfect devotion to public service. Mr. Speaker, as the House knows, in 2012, there were no intentions for funding for Minsk government for a short-term judicial appointment of 2 years to assist in clearing the pipeline of criminal cases. That appointment was then extended by an additional 3 months. As that appointment ended, the Honourable Chief Justice was a review, they would be valuable for there to be additional judicial support for the civil commercial jurisdiction. This appointment was made with a view to provide for a short-term relief of the judiciary. That appointment came to an end in August 2017, and since then, the work of the Supreme Court has been shared among three rather than four judges. It is the Honourable Chief Justice's view that operating in a complement of three justices by feasible, taking pressure on the court diary when highly valued commercial cases arise and prevents running two criminal trials simultaneously. In two high value commercial cases, running through the system could have the real potential to bring about pressure on the court. This could in turn lead to the possibility that these matters will not be dealt with as quickly as the judiciary would like. Added to this, we are also cognizant of the trend displayed by the most recent statistics from the Court of Service, which show that there was an increase in 48% in the number of criminal matters against the Supreme Court last year. There are, however, no cases awaiting date for the criminal trial, or for first hearing dates in the civil and final application as a magistrate of the Supreme Court at this time. And then, Chief Justice's view that it is important that delays in criminal matters be minimized, particularly in cases involving persons. Following ongoing close consultation with the Honourable Chief Minister and the Honourable Chief Justice, Cabinet is able to approve funding for a fourth charge for a 3-year appointment. Chief, we will continue to monitor the workload and the needs of the judiciary before making a determination as to whether or not the fourth charge will become a permanent increase to the judicial complement. Together with the record of this vacancy in April this year, the Judicial Service Commission also advertised a vacancy for an Supreme Court judge. This is a permanent post, and for the statutory retirement age of 67, to succeed Mr. Justice Butler, Chief Judge, who will be retiring in August this year. I would like to personally express my gratitude to Mr. Justice Butler for his work and contribution to the water legal system, and wish him all the best in the future. Lastly, Mr. Speaker, I have worked closely with the Chief Executive of the Water Court Service to ensure that the court administration is properly resourced. This is important so that the operations of the court of the judiciary, court users, and the legal profession are maintained to enable them to offer a timely and efficient justice system of the control. I take the opportunity to sincerely thank our Supreme Court justices for discharging their obligations immediately and thinking them with the best traditions of the independence of the judiciary and the rule of law. It will be remiss of me to thank you and Paul, Francis, Stanley, and Kevin for as ever your unfailing and patient support and help throughout the year. Similarly, Mr. Speaker, I wish to thank also my magnificent ministry team, Stanley Gagliano, David Santos, Linda Oscar, Carl Tanner, Matthew Lazarus, and about the numerous and long character, including the death that Edwards had run, and then the rest was taken to Mark Evaldi. The usual speech of a medical and difficulty, I am a man, and who are with the thanks for the patience and yours and stamina. It is undeniable that the leaders of our nation were vested with a responsibility to speak and to act for the benefit of our community. That is undeniable too. All the new services that we have announced last year, all the enhancements to service provision that have set up today, and the deep and wide recruitment of the best personnel to provide the services are tests to the discharge of the obligations that the community places on those that sit on this side of the house. The work of government and dynamic nation that can also require fairness, fairness, and consistent attention. Speaker, on having grown up in Gibraltar in the 80s, our progress as a nation today is as comparable as it is regular. And I want to say, Speaker, that it is by dint of the efforts of those that come before us. To those who lay the foundations of our civil society and vibrant constitutional democracy. To the generation of Gibraltarians who returned from different parts of the world after the evacuation to build our nation. We stood firm against a hostile dictator and endured a closed border. To the first Jesuit government that revolutionized our economy and laid the foundations for our present prosperity and therefore, I say, opportunity. But I feel that Gibraltar is more than any other place in Europe and perhaps even further afield. And in no important respect, a land of equal opportunity. We speak and come from the speech to examine the very strength of allowing individuals in our community to seize opportunities. But without a shadow of any doubt, the central point of those strands is one of the joint defenses, many revolutionary policies. We seek from government to pay for any students who are secured at the university to read a first degree. In this financial year, when in this financial year alone, the spend on tertiary education will be 16.5 million revenue because the government now also pays for a master's degree. The result of that simple yet undeniable transformative policy is evident today. I ask Mr. Speaker, as the voter matured and being transformed from the days in which they grew up, not just by staying in a physical environment, back to the development of its laws, culture, civil society, and political processes. I'm yet to read anything in any public opinion, Mr. Speaker, where I can find a country that for £131.08 per month and a top effective tax rate of 23%, benefit to assistance, optimum primary, secondary, and tertiary care, the latter in the best centers in the UK and Spain that is free. At the point of delivery to our people. But there is not one, not two, not three, but only school to the point of one electoral mandate. We invest in an entirely new primary care centre and impossibly in children's primary care centre in the new services. Such benefits right increases in staffing levels in the children with more doctors, more nurses, more other health professionals in the full staff than ever before. Not to mention increases in service expansion. And the fact in government that we have promised to work, helping improve services and care for all sectors of our community and not just with the next privileged team. It's been my colleagues have provided many, many more examples of how our mounting social insurance contributors and taxes must truly constitute the best value for money in most parts of the world, not the world. I would therefore suggest, Mr. Speaker, that there is courage in government, and not, as it has been contended, that we on this side of the House contain the policy that government imposes. I think that that phrase has meant to apply to us, connecting the world further from the truth. It is inevitable that the campaign is a time to build and debate contested ideas and to set a plan for our nation. But once the battle of ideas has been won, this project have to be delivered. And I'm sure that anyone can achieve any level of this government of not achieving results and our completion of the vast majority of our own presidents that are bring real, affordable homes to our community so that we can start or grow families. A new world-class sporting facility for sports and men and men. Who does not recognize this speaker? The expression of that in a society with government keeps the manifesting not as a mere witness, but as a flurry of benefits. I will not be proud to call by the good government, Mr. Speaker, truly proud, because the revenue of government is probably better into the community without representing and public spirit. If the economy is performing well, the wealth generated should be redistributed, rightfully compensated into education, health, family and social care, housing, and law enforcement services like justice and other important government services. The reason why I'm convinced that you vote more than representing wealth is overall a contented community is because persons who objectively assess our system know that the broadcast is the best model of a genuine, sincere endeavor to continue to grow to the land of equal opportunity. Every attempt is made, as far as I can see, from following the money in the estimate of every year to distribute the wealth generated expanding and equally as any human system exists. Only yesterday, the United Nations came to the head of the budget, where significant progress for workers in Volta and moreover, that the budget appears to address the very many important points of the manifesto for change. I worked hand in glove with Victor Fellow to try to provide fairer employment conditions in all remaining human responsibility. And we have been stimulus and spirit in advertising just how much we achieve for not working men and women. The selflessness to me, however, was the measure of a man who only cared for doing right and working fast. That, however, Mr. Speaker, know how much he seemed to meet for his members, for whom he fought extremely hard, and I was always asked to agree to his representations when he was right. I will sincerely miss our working relationship. Mr. Speaker, there will be blind spots in any system, obviously, that need to be resolved, and that is why it is so important for us to listen to those who stand. Why are we simply meeting personally with those who need our assistance? Still, when the system fails, I need to be correct and get. On reflection of the end of my case, Mr. Speaker, I will ask whether my own responsibility will have placed our pensions, all our services, and our families at the center of what we do. My teams will have heard me say on numerous occasions that our loyalty must always be to those who need our help, not to systems, not to policies, but to people, every day of the week. Technology is a speaker who never found a deeper level of humanity in our interactions and decision-making. It is always good to remember that our systems and processes are to serve and benefit persons and not to pass the record. And when we are wrong, Mr. Speaker, we can still admit, clearly, learn from the mistake, correct the grievance, and work better. Smart. We need to begin with respect and patience and capture the views of others when implementing policy. This is why, Mr. Speaker, I make regularly the charities and associations follow them every 6 weeks. It is my way to keep up pressure on myself, my team, and to keep to the commitments that we have agreed at a previous meeting. As importantly, the individual charity associations and focus are linked, still linked through, Mr. Speaker, so that I do not allow the thousands to drown out the importance. And given the volume of correspondence that come in, it is easy and sometimes too easy to be sucked into the vortex of every circumstance and park what is in fact the importance. Well, Mr. Speaker, my officials and government say countless times that nothing is gained by trying to excuse the institution. We must act always as though we would like to be treated ourselves and those who love. Mr. Speaker, as I begin to end, I posit that any objective of study will conclude that in the light of all of the matters that members on this side of the House have set out, this government is not questioning, not just a government of ideas, but importantly, we are a government that delivers. I think, however, Mr. Speaker, that it is also true that every member safety, that you do not forget that making people are, first and foremost, a strong personal community of brothers and sisters, of families, of friends, of neighbors. Indeed, you think everyone cannot and cannot do everything. As we want to transition from a community to a more sophisticated society, we do not lose hope of what makes the world effective by respect and generosity to one another. I work on a together at the tender age of 7, spends most days teaching me a thing or two about how to live my life better, spoke to human teaching, about how humankind is really one, and that we can all teach each other kindly. One love, he told me, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this discourse is ordinarily cast in terms of the right of the citizen on the one hand, and the obligations of elected politicians and officials on the other. And that conceptualization is meant, of course, and it's against. I wish, however, to attempt to slightly recast that conception by finding a more positive note that all of us have the privilege to support each other, and we must all collectively continue to improve the fabric of our society, our common well-being and happiness, and it is all in our different skills and in our own way, a good citizen, and work towards the noble cause of being there for each other. There's no doubt in my mind that my grandparents and the generation that endured the trauma of evacuation and the close frontier worked extremely hard to bequeath to us the world of today, suffering and prosperous, which drove itself domestically and internationally and safe. I will have that same unloving, sacred duty to leave the succeeding generations an even better supporter than the one of today. Surely, Mr. Speaker, that must be our collective aspiration. Thank you.
Tomorrow morning at 9:30.